Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. Listen on demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Now available free for both iPhone and Android devices.
An equity strategist that everybody cares about and that everybody watches is Tobias Lefkovich at Citigroup. Tobias, good morning.
Good morning. Happy Thanksgiving.
Did you survive Thanksgiving?
I did. I did my requisite food and football.
You did? Yeah, there's a little bit of football. Everything's said and done. The equity market's up 63. There is a lift. There is a buoyancy. How should we interpret better economic data leading into a rebound from that gloom of pre-election? How do you fold it all together?
Well, I think some of this is a bit of a relief rally from what we saw immediately post the election as the market traded down 6-7%, concerned about the fiscal cliff, et cetera. So there were some oversold conditions if you're a technician that kind of resolved. The issue is now over the next couple of weeks and everybody comes back and to negotiate the fiscal cliff or in Europe to discuss some of their own budgetary issues. You know, what is the news headlines going to look like? I would argue you're likely to see more volatility in the markets, so though this isn't necessarily a kind of V-shape and we bounce higher immediately. People are going to need a little bit more confidence about the political class being able to work out a deal. And you know, with both sides of the aisle really at fault here in terms of not finding compromise area.
What are you listening for next week?
Well, I'm going to be listening to two things. One, how much is the argument going to be, for example, in Washington about tax rates as opposed to, you know, getting more taxes from the wealthy, which could come through capping deductions, et cetera? And two, how much discussion is there going to be on entitlement reform, and what are those down payments, if you like, for a much bigger package sometime next year?
What's your gut tell you about when this gets resolved? Is it this year, or are we really looking more mid to late January after the new Congress is sworn in?
I think both sides would prefer to get this done before the end of the year. And if that's the case, you're looking at something in the, call it December 20th, time frame. So there's time for passage of any votes and for Congress to get out of Washington. You know, from what we've heard probably months ago was it could take 3 to 4 days to actually go through, quote unquote, the parliamentary procedures of getting whatever deal is, negotiated to, actually going through the what do you call the procedures that they have to go through in terms of getting a bill written, passed, negotiated, compromised, and then keep going. And we're talking about a framework agreement anyway. There is another view that we have to go over the cliff on January 1, and then we do kind of a bungee jump, so it's a very short-term issue. I think both of them have validity. I still think the odds probably favor something before December, because I think both sides would prefer to have it before December than have to have this kind of mass scramble in the early part of next year.
While the domestic manufacturing sector is clearly prepared for the cliff, the consumer has not responded, has not increased saving, has not pared back consumption. Are we in the financial industry doing a good enough job of educating the public as to the risks associated with what's in front of us?
It's a great question, but I'm not convinced that it's the financial community that can educate them as much as the need for financial literacy more broadly. We can sit here and say, let's raise taxes on the wealthy and close a gap. But even if you looked at the kind of top two tax rates, you're talking about $55 billion of incremental income, shrinking the deficit, but you're still running, $500 billion of excess spending, and that's today. It gets worse due to demographics and healthcare over the next 20, 30 years. So the financial literacy issue isn't just about a fiscal cliff near term and that people will lose things like the payroll tax cut. It's, how do we balance our much longer term liabilities relative to our revenue intake? And I don't think people really focus on that because it means sacrifice and nobody really wants to do that.
If we put a percent on nominal GDP, top-line GDP, how does that fold into the equity market?
So think of it this way. We're currently looking at something close to 2% GDP for 2013, which already assumes more than 1% of fiscal drag. So things like the payroll tax cuts are being assumed not to be extended. Things like the Affordable Care Act tax, the 3.8% tax on unearned income, already cutting in there. So we're already bringing in some factors to create drag. We've already had drag this year from state and local government, as well as some of the federal programs waning. So we can kind of grow in that sense if we get the full fledged, you know, 4 or 5% impact to fiscal cliff, then I think CBO already estimates we're going to a recession because we just don't have enough impetus to keep going. So, again, our base case is that there will be fiscal drag. We still will grow about 2%. Our earnings will grow about 5%. And then should we get a much broader agreement, call it the grand bargain type of factors, then you're talking about risk premiums coming down and markets moving even more. So our target price, for example, for the S&P 500 next year is 1615. I have to be careful when I say 1615 because people don't hear it as clearly. And that gets you, call it almost 15% market movement from here. 5% is earnings, the balance is from risk premiums coming down.
I would say that's one of the most optimistic estimates on the street.
Might be. We run about 10 different models to try to determine our market outcome, see where the bulk of the data comes out, and then we kind of look at that aggregated view. And I would say about 8 of them are telling us somewhere in that, call it 1600 to 1650 range. So it generates an outcome. We don't have a bias. In other words, I don't come in and say, here's our earnings estimates, here's the multiple the market will give it, because unfortunately nobody listens to me and acquiesces to my will for a PE multiple.
We're about 1 year into what could be called a recovery of credit conditions here domestically, especially down the income ladder. Has the credit thawed sufficiently enough to really give us a boost next year, ex fiscal drag?
I'm thrilled you asked me that question, Joe, because one of the statistics we watch really, really carefully is the Federal Reserve Board's lending standards survey for senior loan officers about commercial industrial loans or business loans. They fell very sharply latter part of last year, as I'm sure you know the chart, going into October of last year. And that was due to the fiscal problems in Spain, in Italy, in the Greek elections, our own super committee not being able to come to an agreement on, you know, leading to sequestration. And as a result, there's a 9-month lead from that lending survey data to actual business conditions, capital spending, hiring, things like that. So that hurt us this summer with the normal 9-month lag into the early fall. The fact that the data has improved, as you say, lending conditions have improved, that actually should give us a boost late this year into next year. I think, as you mentioned earlier, corporates are very aware of the fiscal cliff and what its impact could be, so there's a little bit hesitancy right now to spend. But we think that once you've got some clarity as you move into next year, we should see that boost come in because it's been very consistent for 20 years.
Tobias Lefkovich with us with Citigroup. This with a market up 56 points, 12,892 on the Dow, first print on the VIX, an attractive 15.01, down 0.30 points. Autos move, GM up 1.9%, Ford Motor up 1%, Facebook $24.50. Boy, that is distant from 18 or 19 of a number of days ago. And of course, the headline with Mr. Lefkovich is his idea of 1615 on the S&P. That's up a good 15.6% from where we are now. Doing things in the equity market, Tobias Lefkovich with a 1615 view, up 15%, more or less. Tobias Lefkovich with Citigroup joins us. Tobias, what's the difference between the Dow and the S&P 500? Why do pros look at the S&P 500, where we're used to having as our benchmark the Dow?
I suspect it's just it's a broader-based index, market cap weighted, so you don't get that in the Dow necessarily. It tends to be more of an average. Each stock represents a certain number of points in the Dow. But it's also, you're not sitting with 30 names. You've just got a much wider degree of impact. So in theory, if 30 names, if one of those stocks moved dramatically, potentially it'll pull the Dow and be less representative.
Right. The Dow equivalency to your 1615, imagine, folks, if you were sitting there and Tobias Lefkovich said, well, I think we're going to 14,800 or 14,900 on the Dow. I mean, you're essentially saying we finally break out to record highs.
Well, you're touching on a different issue, Tom, which is about a year ago, it was December of 2011, we wrote a report called The Raging Bull Thesis. And it was really an argument that we were entering a secular bull market in the next 12 to 18 months, meaning you take out the old highs, which were set back in either 2000, 2007, depending how you want to calculate it. But This was replacing what we called our trading places thesis, the argument that the market was in a trading range. And there were a variety of factors for it. There were growth factors, for example, housing turning, the energy boom in the country, technology through mobility and the infrastructure build associated with that, plus manufacturing in America getting very competitive. That was your growth feature. Your funds flow or new money coming into equities were really from the baby boom echo, the children of the baby boomers entering their savings years starting in 2013. And the last thing we needed was multiple expansion, which was tied to what we kind of ended off the prior discussion with, is that multiples expand when risk premiums come down, and this has to do through major policy reform on tax and spending. We really don't have a choice, because ultimately we're going to end up looking like Europe, and I don't mean that in terms of social welfare systems. I'm talking about it in terms of not being able to borrow at a cheap rate, not being able to keep taxes relatively low, and not being able to spend and having to practice austerity. So we do the right things, responsible behavior for the future, and we will have significant multiple expansion.
How much of this has to do with what the Federal Reserve is doing, especially given the fact that they're going to be purchasing mortgage-backed securities probably until 2015?
Well, I don't know what the Fed is going to do by 2015. I know what they're saying today, but if we were sitting here with, and you know, Joe, you're an economist, so you probably have a better feel for this than I do, but if the federal government kind of was able to contain itself, we were going to get growth in the 3% type range in 2013, 2014, let's say. I'm not sure the Fed would necessarily be practicing mm-hmm. the same policies by 2015. I think they'd pull back right. on it well before that. So you've got to keep that in mind. I think the Fed is doing what it can to keep liquidity out there and to keep essentially funding costs for corporates and for consumers low. I don't think they're having as much impact on the residential right. housing marketplace, because if you're not creditworthy, you're not getting a loan irrespective of the mortgage right. rate.
RIM, folks, it's done a double. It's gone from $6.50, $11.46 right now. RIM, a moonshot this morning, up nicely. Tobias Lefkovich with us with Citigroup. Tobias, you talk about an optimism in equities, but if I look at like Asia and what I need from Asia to redound back upon us optimistically, if I look at Singapore's GDP, it's well under 1%. It's not the juggernaut it was. If I was like to get on Singapore Airlines and fly over there to Singapore, where I see a sub 3% unemployment rate, how badly do I need Singapore and Taiwan and the rest to come back?
So let's do it a slightly different way. If you're looking at the S&P 500, and I think there's a broader question there, but if you're just looking at the S&P 500, about 70% of revenues for the S&P 500 occur here in the good old USA. Throw in Canada, Mexico, and you're starting to get closer to 75, 80%. Europe's in the 12% range. Emerging markets are relatively small for S&P 500 companies. Now, they're individual companies that have huge exposures. But as a whole, the S&P 500 is far, far more driven by what happens in North America. I think when you look at Asia, in particular, in some of the developing regions in Asia, and some of the major exporting regions of Asia, if it's China, Singapore, Taiwan, Thailand, etc., there you need growth in the U.S. and you need growth in Europe. And clearly, Europe's going to be challenged next year as well, probably restrictions from growth. And, you know, if you go to Singapore, particularly if you go to Singapore, you're going to have a very lovely flight. Long,
really?
But I flew there a few weeks ago, and it's a very
Did you
nice
fly on Singapore Airlines?
Singapore Air.
Oh, okay.
So it's a nice, comfortable flight.
I got to get Tobias's life. Joe, we take a memo here. We gotta lux out with Tobias.
I don't think you want us hanging out at City with you, Tobias.
You know what? If you spend a day in a city, which I'm going to be doing in Europe for the next 10 days, it's not really fun.
Joe, jump in here with a question for Tobias.
Okay, Tobias. So you've got investors who are shell-shocked, especially the millennials. How do we begin to rebuild their confidence over the long term so that they begin investing in the way, say, that my generation has and the baby boomers did?
Well, I think if we look at the what I'm going to call the baby boom echo, the people entering the age, you know, called 35 to 39 group of that cohort of people, they're going to actually start growing again after having declined from 2000 to 2013. This is based on Bureau of Census data. They'll grow, and there are a bigger number of them today than there were even the baby boomers in that period in the 80s and 90s. It isn't growing as rapidly, but it is a larger group starting in the next couple of years. They are not as hung up, if you want to call it, or not as encumbered by the problems of the equity market of the past 12 years. Because think of it this way. If you're turning 35 next year, you were 22 in 2000 when the market peaked. you weren't focused on the equity market. You were focused on how do you pay your college debt at 22. So just like the baby boomers in the 80s and 90s who were buying stocks didn't really recall the 70s period of the equity market, which was pretty depressing, because that really happened to a generation before them, to their parents. But I think from a job and a kind of career perspective, they are much more worried about where their futures are. And, you know, and if you go one generation behind, or not even a generation, one decade behind, the 25-year-olds who are graduating who can't find jobs, and I'm raising two of them right now, that's very concerning. Those first few years of your job, of your job life, can have long-term negative implications. That's something we have to fix to create corporate confidence and create consumer confidence. There's $9 trillion of household deposits sitting in bank accounts and in money market accounts, and people are afraid to spend it because they might need it in the future. Plus, you've got $1.7, $1.8 trillion of corporate cash that isn't being spent because they're still concerned about what's going to happen with taxes and policy. So this issue of getting government to kind of really focus on these things and do it in a nonpartisan, reasonable way would be wonderful. And I think they know that, actually, in Washington, from our context there. The question is, can they get past the kind of extreme partisanship on both the extreme right and the extreme left of the aisle?
Great, Tobias. Thank you so much. Tobias Lefkovich, he is with Citigroup.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012.